Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, welcome to Full Swing Tonight with Get a Grip and Scratch. I'm Shane Bacon. That is Claire Rogers from golf.com. Make sure you check out all of Claire's Rory McIlroy complimented social media stuff at K Claire Rogers. You can also check out the Rogers Report. She posts that weekly on golf.com. And we've been doing Full Swing episode recaps. This is episode 4 titled Imposter Syndrome. And of course, it's focusing a lot on Joel Damon. And Claire, we could dive into the episode and talk about the things we liked and didn't like and the winners of the episode. But we've got the star of the show, right?
The man himself
on the podcast, Joel Damon, taking time away from being, I guess, 3 hours of being a single dad to joining us. And he's taking a little bit of time between tournaments as well. This is a day off and Joel's still taking a little bit of time. So we appreciate it. Joel, how is it being a TV star? How is it now adding that to the resume?
It's a little weird. We went to the premiere party at Top Golf on Saturday, Gino and I did, and there's like Shaq and Serena Williams and cool people there and stuff. And then there's like us. It's like, what are we doing here? They're taking pictures of us. I don't know whether they even knew who we were or not, but they were just taking pictures of us and be like, hey, do all this. This is fun. I'm like, what has happened to our life? Because we are just normal dudes who like to have fun. And all of a sudden, I guess other people kind of want to watch that, which is very interesting to me.
Joel, we started the episode off with you at the Waste Management in 2022 and the whole Harry Higgs Joel thing where you guys took your shirts off. You said then the tour calls you and yells at you because you aren't supposed to take your shirt off on a golf course, which makes sense. How long was the tour conversation and did it cost you any schmecks?
They called us the next day. I was doing John Malinger's charity event. So I had a couple of beers in me, thankfully, it made the conversation go a lot smoother, but said, hey, you can't do that. You're probably going to get in trouble. I said, okay, but you have to take down all of your social media posts if you guys do that, because you guys are plastering, you know, it's all over the place. So you have to take all that down because you can't have it up there, promote it and find me. And they're like, that's pretty good one. Well played. And they're like, the next day I was on the pack, we had a pack meeting the next day, and the commissioner Monahan gave me a hug and said that was awesome. So I figured I wouldn't be in too much trouble at that point.
A little bit of a win.
Yeah, exactly. And they said, please, in the future when you're talking about it, please sound regrettable and that you won't do it again. And I'm very sorry to her. I'm terribly sorry for this. Yes.
Joel, have you, I was trying to think about this as I was revisiting that experience from a year ago. I was thinking about as a male in his 30s, how often you take your shirt off. And I was like, maybe vacation, if you're at the pool or the ocean. How many people do you think you've ever taken your shirt off in front of before that experience? You think the max was like 6-8 people?
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I really do. It's not like a nervous tick for me or something where I stand in the corner at parties and I'm like, instead of like looking at my phone or having a beer, I just start taking off my clothes. It's not like a thing I do. So
a party trick.
Yeah, it's not one of those. And I don't have a particularly amazing body. Nate Bergazzi, who I met last week, said I have a seal body. So kind of
Navy SEAL is what he meant.
Yeah, totally. So it's interesting. But it was one of those things that it kind of went away, and then this tournament brought it all back because everyone's yelling you to take your shirt off and you're just like, I'm such an idiot. I should not have done that because I will live with this the rest of my life.
And on social media, Claire, I know you have a couple of questions for Mr. Damon.
Yes. First is, did you have any hesitations when Netflix approached you, or was it just, all right, so yeah, you did. Will you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I said no originally. Like, I'm going to say something really stupid or you're going to follow me around and I'm going to be in trouble and I don't like this idea. And my wife wasn't really into it either. I mean, I put a lot of stuff on social media. Like, I'm a pretty open person, but it also, like, we choose what we put out there, really. So, yeah, my original answer was no. And then kind of talked to Chad Mom a little bit, watched Drive to Survive a little bit. I'm like, okay, maybe we can do this. And then I was like, probably not even like put me on there hardly, you know, with all these big names. I was like, sweet. Well, I'll just kind of like fill this thing out and do whatever. And all of a sudden we were in, you know, neck deep to this whole thing. And We just really leaned into it. We're like, hey, we like you guys. You guys seem pretty cool. You're not going to make us look dumb. So here's all access to everything. And we really kind of dove right into it. And I think it turned out okay.
Definitely. And then my second question is, so you read the letter that you and Gino have had. So were you guys in contact between, you know, you guys played whatever when you were 18, 19, and then he became your caddy however many years later? What was your friendship or communication like the time in between, and how much time overlapped?
Yeah, so growing up, we didn't keep in touch too much when he was in college. Obviously, he's doing college things. We would see each other at events and kind of hang out a little bit. But post-college, he actually moved to Seattle and lived like 20 minutes away from Washington where I was in school. So we kept in touch there. He would come over and act like a college kid still, which was awesome. He would drink beer and eat pizza together and play video games. So it was great. And then when I moved back home after college, I actually moved in with him. He had a guest room and a bed, so I camped out in there for like 8 months before I moved down to Arizona to be a professional golfer. So we were always in contact. Our lives kept kind of overlapping, even though we weren't, you know, we're a little different ages. He was married. He had a real job, and I was just a goofball. So, but we were always in touch. We always hung out. And from when I turned pro, let's see, in the fall of 2010 to when he started caddying would have been the spring of 15. But we kept in touch the entire time and would see each other. You know, he'd come down to Arizona, and I'd see him whenever I went back home.
So the letter didn't come out of nowhere.
No, that was, yeah, exactly. It was, he had this dream and this idea that we were going to do this, and all of a sudden it somehow worked.
Joel, I got a couple questions about the actual content of the episode. Did you think after 36 holes last year that you could win the U.S. Open? Did you go into the weekend feeling like you could win?
I don't know. I don't really remember what I was feeling Saturday. I think I was just like in the mode. I felt like after I got off the golf course Saturday that I could still win the U.S. Open. I think I was 3 or 4 back, but I knew it was going to be tough. And if I went out and played a good round of golf, I'd be right there. But I don't remember. I think I was, after the round on Friday, I was like, what is happening? There's cameras everywhere. There's people want to talk to me. And then we had all day. I didn't have till 3:30 on Saturday. So it was a long morning and a long, really afternoon at that point. So I think I just wanted to get going, get started. But I vividly remember getting stretched out on Saturday evening and being like, I can actually win this. And I believe I can. I don't know if I actually believe that on Saturday morning.
Are you and Gino the closest player caddy duo on tour, at least from what you've seen over the years?
Yeah, I know that James and Ryan Palmer have been together for a very long time and they're close friends. But like, I mean, Gino like married us. Like he's our officiant. Like he's stayed at my house this last week and like, yeah, we're super close. I can't imagine anyone else. Like the amount of time we spend together, you know, the things we talk about and whatever, I think it's way more than golf.
I mean, he legitimately called you a boner on the episode, which is when we get into some of our segments later in this, just Claire and I, that is going to resurface, just so you know. So I hope you understand.
Certainly,
that.
Of course. Yeah, that's fair. It's, I probably was being a boner, but I don't know if, yeah, standard. Standard operating procedure with Gino.
Yeah, in that relationship. I've seen it first person, and it's very interesting. I did want to transition to something a little bit more serious from that, but I just wanted to talk to you about your mom for a second. You know, I mean, you touched on this in the episode, and you talked about being lost after you lost your mom, after she passed away. And over those 4 years, you talked about being a leaf in the wind. What were you kind of going through personally, and what brought you back to kind of floating, to kind of back to life?
Yeah, I was lost. I stopped going to class. Like I was a pretty good student. Like school came easy to me. I did the work. I liked it. And then, you know, like it was kind of the same time in your life when you're transitioning to college. I lost my mom in spring of junior of high school. At that point, all I had was golf really. But I had, like, I'm going from a very small town to this huge city in Seattle and big university. I'm starting to do what 18-year-olds do, you know, we do in college. We start to drink beer and we hang out and you're exploring the world. And I was lost. I would have been lost. I think just I went from a big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a huge pond. And I was just blind. Yeah. So I didn't go to class. I was probably drinking a little too much. I wouldn't say I was drinking more than any other college kid, but trying to be a Division I athlete and going to school wasn't, my priorities were off. And so I was just around and, you know, scholarship money ran out and, I had a job for a little bit and that money ran out. And I was just like, I have to get my life together. I'm 22 years old now. And the only thing I'm good at right now is golf. I don't have a college degree. My work ethic is terrible. It was one of those moments like, man, I have an opportunity here and I should really go for that. And then, maybe a year after that, I was like, okay, this is all science. This is all happening. I should really like step up to the plate here and grow up. And that all thankfully worked out in the end, but I was a lost puppy there for a while. That's for sure.
So, I mean, it was you basically slapping your own self in the face and going, all right, let's dial this back in. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I was down here in Arizona. I just moved down here. I was playing professional golf, kind of. I know I wasn't working out like I should have been, or, you know, like guys do now. It was just like, yeah, I was completely screwing up. I had a great opportunity. I had a great backer to get started in this game, and I just wasn't using it. And it was like, I was looking around. I was seeing other people that I was better than, but they were having more success, and they're moving up to Korn Ferry, and they're doing these things. I'm like, okay, I gotta step up here. And I just didn't want to look back and have regrets of not giving it my all or my best effort.
All right. So a couple more and then we'll let you go, Joel. But I was looking at the way you've played this season, you know, kind of the wraparound season in 22 into 23, and you've been playing great golf. And it's felt like, at least, you know, you're one of the two people I have starred on my PGA Tour app. You know, like I actually follow your rounds and pay attention to what you do. It seemed like every year you've progressed. I mean, obviously getting the win was huge for you. Do you feel like the confidence, the mindset, the work that you're putting in, do you feel like that's ramped up as well? And do you feel like you're in a different place now in 2023 than maybe you've been in before in terms of the way you approach the game?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like I had a letdown after the US Open over the summer. That was kind of like, I had a hard time getting up for events after that. It was like, you're at this huge moment. And I never really recovered. It just was kind of worn out after that and didn't really reset. So had a good reset in this fall and I played awesome in the fall. Really as good as I ever have for that stretch. And then, you know, the off season hits, I have a kid and I don't really touch club until Pebble. And all of a sudden it was like really rusty right now, but I have the drive as much as I ever have to be good. My short game has come around a ton since the fall. Putting's continually improving. I'm working hard on that. And my ball striking is always pretty good. So just try to, you know, maintain that and always improve a little bit here and there. But things are moving, but I want to be good. And I don't know, I hate the whole perspective thing, having a kid, all this other jazz, but I'm like, I feel like I'm a little more motivated than like, I'm excited to like practice when I get to RIV tomorrow. Like that's gonna like, I'm like, oh sweet, I get to work with my putting coach tomorrow and I get to get better. Like that to me is exciting. And I have not had that feeling very often. So yeah. And honestly, like, I mean, this money is a huge motivator. Like, looking at how much money we have in these elevated events or designated events is massive. And it's like, dude, you just have to play kind of solid and you can make a pile of it. So that's a huge motivator as well.
All right, last thing. You now have a child. When you were filming this, you did not have a child. Are you happy with your stroller purchase? Is the stroller worked out?
Should I throw Netflix under the bus on this one or not?
I mean, this isn't affiliated with them, so sure, you can.
So we go get the stroller. Turns out it was slightly more money than they could pay for without getting whatever by the bosses, by the back end. It's like, hey, we have to get this approved. So we actually left the stroller, pulled it back out of the car, and then we bought the stroller before we had a kid. So the stroller has worked out nicely, but it was on our own. So it's a super nice big bassinet on wheels, basically. So we walked the dog and walked the kid, and it's worked out great.
Perfect.
Joel, thank you very much. Yeah. We really appreciate this. We will say this is our favorite episode because I think Claire and I both believe it's our favorite episode, but you're the first person that's come on in four episodes. So by you doing this couch bed media session, I think I think you're amplifying what you've done on the Netflix show. But it was fun to watch, and we're going to dive deeper into you and Gino when you get off the phone.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate the support, and I might actually listen to this, see what you guys say about me and Gino.
There you go. There you go. Joel Damon, star of the episode. Joel, you can sign off. Claire, you cannot sign off. You have to stay here and chat about the episode that was Joel Damon. And started out shirtless. We talked a little bit about that. What happened at the kind of waste management WM a year ago. I was kind of reminded at how just in your face it all happened. I mean, Harry Higgs takes his shirt off. Joel does it. The logo company I co-own with Kate Smith, we made a logo for Joel for the shirt off after all that happened. I think it was like an NFT or something they ended up selling. But I mean, it was a big deal. Like, this doesn't happen in golf. And what a way to kind of kick off that episode.
It was a perfect start to the show. The energy was high. Sorry, we've got a kid screaming his head off.
It's okay. It's okay.
Someone who didn't watch this episode. Sorry, lost my train of thought. Remind me where we were.
We were just talking about, just the shirtless introduction to Joel Damon. You know, I mean, again, Claire, you got to think about it like this. Let's say 70% of people watching this Netflix series aren't going to know these people like you and I know it. Imagine not knowing anything about a cricket player or a hockey player, and that's the introduction. Yeah, how do you not fall in love with the guy?
Exactly. And that was my biggest takeaway from this, was that golf fans have gotten the opportunity to fall in love with Harry Higgs, fall in love with Beef Johnson, you know, 2016 PGA. But Joel has not been, you know, in the golf world, we all know him, but I don't think people who don't follow golf would know him. And this gives them the opportunity to fall in love with Joel and Gino, which is awesome from start to finish, the serious stuff and the funny stuff.
And I think it's a good point you brought up about the Gino side of this, because I think as much as you're falling in love with who Joel Damon is as you're watching this, and this is a lengthier episode. I mean, this is longer than episode 3, and I believe it was longer than the previous two before that. I mean, this hits all the notes. I mean, you get emotion, obviously, with the passing of his mother and then him battling his own cancer issues, you know, with testicular cancer in your early 20s. You go through the ups and downs of trying to be a pro golfer and ups and downs of confidence. You know, I mean, you ask, what's the difference in Rory McIlroy and the guy that's 20th in the world? And it comes down to, sure, he can hit the ball great. They all can. Sure, he can putt it great. They all can. A lot of this comes down to what's between the ears. And what I loved about this episode was you really kind of danced in the mind of Joel Damon and how tough it is to believe in yourself at times.
Yeah, my favorite moment was, you know, they cut Rory saying, to be the best in the world, you have to have confidence. And then Joel saying, you know, I work hard, but somebody's got to be the 70th best in the world. That is like my favorite quote probably from the whole series so far. It was just so him and so perfect.
I've been lucky enough to spend a decent amount of time around Joel Damon in my years. I consider him a buddy of mine. I can promise you, those watching this episode, he is exactly like this off camera. I loved Max saying when he has a few adult beverages in, the end of his day is kind of beating in the head of Joel Damon how good you are at golf. And I think one of my takeaways from the first time I got a chance to play with him, Claire, was just that, you know, almost shocked at how good he hit it and how consistent it was and how solid it was. Because when you hear him talk about his own golf game, or even at the time, maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago now, when I first played with him, he wasn't a PGA Tour winner, right? And he wasn't this guy that's as consistent. You were a bit surprised at times of how freaking good he is. And and Max went through this as well, right? You know, everybody around you saying you're great, we just need you to believe that as well. And it feels like Joel has struggled with that, struggles with it, but he also has a lot of people that are great in his life going, no, man, like, you can win these big events.
Yeah. And I think fans will be surprised by that, because you look at him and he doesn't have the, you know, Rory, I guess we all know Rory, but looks like a PGA Tour player. And Gino says he's just your friendly next door neighbor who happens to be really good at golf. And that's personality wise and looks wise. That's kind of, he just shows up. He's casual. He doesn't have these loud outfits that we're used to players sometimes, you know, throwing something crazy on Saturday at a major.
Claire, he's working out with his wife. I mean, you know, like you think about Rory in the gym, or, you know, Jordan Spieth in the gym or whatever. And it's like, their trainers there, nutritionist, yada, yada, yada. And this guy's pushing sleds with his wife on the sled. Like, I mean, you can't be any more normal than that, right?
Yeah. He's saying, I don't know what exercise that is, what you're describing. And then he's saying, you know, I have to charm my trainer so he doesn't make me do all the hard stuff. I just think it's like a middle schooler trying to get out of gym class. It's too perfect.
And the line from his lone PGA Tour win, and I remember it happening, I remember watching it, but, you know, he said, it's just so freaking hard to win on the PGA Tour. You hear so many people talk about that. And, you know, 2022 for Joel Damon was such a huge year, not just because of this, because obviously, you know, this is going to improve the profile of who he is off the golf course, but just checking some marks, right? I mean, even watching him go through the journey of sectional qualifying and, like, hasn't a couple drinks in between rounds and goes back out there and shoots five under and asks his caddy, do you even want to go to the US Open? Like, these are questions that I feel like you and I might ask each other if we're playing golf and you're just kind of like throwing out whatever thought bubble passes by. Yeah. But to hear those thought bubbles between those two characters, because this was, I would say this was the episode that had the least amount of outside character involvement. Mm-hmm. It was really just Joel Damon, Gino, and the people close to them and their families.
Oh, it was great. And then it was such like a married couple moment where Gino's like, yeah, I want to go to the US Open. If you do, of course.
Right, right. You want to go to Thai? It's like, I'll have to. Do you want to go to Thai? Like, you're interested in Thai? It sounds great. So I called Gino before we got recording. I wanted to ask him a couple of things. And we touched a couple of things with Joel when he jumped on. But Gino was telling me he was working at his assistant pro at Sahali. When Joel was at UW and his dorm was 10 minutes away. So exactly what Joel said, he said he'd go over there. They'd play Mario Kart. They would eat frozen pizzas and Gino would buy beer because Joel wasn't old enough to buy beer. And I asked about the letter. I said, you know, you wrote a letter to Joel, who obviously was one of your good friends. He said they weren't best friends, but they were really, really good friends at the time. And I said, was it a funny letter or was it a sincere letter? Because it was one of the more beautiful things I can remember watching in sport, right? Them both opening up the letter and reading it again.
The back and forth every other line.
Oh, it's beautiful. So but he said that Joel was the leading money winner on the McKinsey Tour a few years back and got in. And because he was the leading money winner, he got into the Canadian Open. And he was like two shots off the lead after the first round at the Canadian Open. And Gino said, you know, he basically told his wife, like, this guy's got it. You know, he's got it. I know he's got it, and I think I could help him. And Gino said his wife was extremely supportive in terms of the decision, but he said he didn't know how to approach it. So he's like, I'll just write a letter and send it his way. And just to speak a little bit on the relationship and the emotion, because you saw Joel get choked up when he was asked about Gino. I asked Gino, I go, have you watched the episode yet? And he said, yeah, he watched the episode. He said when the producers asked Gino about his relationship with Joel, he said, when he said, I love him, Gino started crying and they cut that off. So Gino's crying about Joel and Joel's crying about Gino. I mean, it really is like the match made in caddy player heaven, right?
It is just amazing. And when you asked Joel, is there any closer player caddy relationship? The only one I could think of is Lee Westwood literally has his wife on the
right
bag.
Exactly.
But besides that, this is as close as it gets. And it's so cool to see the involvement of a caddy. Especially for, I keep going back to outside fans who don't know golf as well, but just a caddy can have as small of a role or as big of a role as the player prefers. And this is, I think, as big as it gets.
I mean, getting dinner together, staying in houses together. I mean, even a lot of the player caddy relationships you see out on tour that look close or make sense to be close, there is a little bit of separation just simply to kind of keep everybody at arm's length. It's that whole, mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're around the person you marry every single day, 18 hours a day, you're going to go crazy, right? If you're around that person, it's important to go have your own alone and personal time. I'm not sure how much alone and personal time Joel and Gino have. A couple of things I wrote down in terms of observation, and I didn't mention this to Joel when we had him on, but I wanted to give him a little bit of love. He had such a professional catch. When he was asked about Gino, he said, the greatest. And then he stopped and said, the second greatest human alive besides my wife. I just, you know, these are things professional wordsmiths do. And he did a great job with that.
He did. It was little, I mean, but it went a lot. It'll go a long way for sure. So.
They're listening to the No Lane Up recap podcast, going to a major. I found that interesting. I mean, talking about Joel as they're driving to the US Open. I wonder how many players do that. And then my Ricky update. This episode, he was U.S. Open alternate under his name. No world ranking, just alternate. So those were some of the things I noted.
Those are all good. Ricky, I'm glad you've got the Ricky watch on because I haven't looked at the graphics as closely, I will say, since episode one. So I'm glad you've got your eye on it.
Anything you kind of picked out or noticed before we get to some segments?
Just kind of a handful of things. I want to give a shout out to just the White Claw. But we can get into that more when we get to the segments. But yeah, I've got a lot written down for, you know, things I noticed and stuff. There's like three answers instead of just one. So we can get right into it.
Yeah, same. I'll start us off with the winner of the episode. I mean, it's Joel and Gino. I mean, I can't really pick one or the other. I think their relationship and also a winner of this episode, I thought, was drinking between rounds. I mean, I think,
I think
if you're ever on the fence about, should I have a beer to calm the nerves or before I get out on the golf course? I mean, I think, you know, one of the best players in the world answered that question for you.
It literally got him into the U.S. Open. So we have the answers there. I wrote, is this the greatest love story in golf?
Ooh.
That was my winner of the episode. It kind of left me questioning that. It's just, they just, their relationship. And I hope everyone, maybe we can put these in as graphics here, but the photos of them on the green carpet, technically from the Netflix premiere, they're holding hands, they're hugging. It's hilarious. So it's just, they're great.
I have another winner, by the way. I wrote this down since you and I said we wrote down a whole bunch. Another winner of this episode is showing people that don't really care about your kids pictures of your kids. Rory did that late in the episode. He showed Jon Rahm and Morikawa at lunch a photo of his daughter. I do that all the time now. This is like just a parenting thing that happens. You don't even realize you're doing it. As you're doing it, Claire, you understand and realize the person you're showing them don't care and are probably even slightly annoyed. It's just nice that I saw Rory do that as well because, you know, I mean, I showed a guy on a flight the other day a picture of my daughter. So I'm like that guy now. And it's good to know that Rory McIlroy also that guy.
It was also funny to see because Rahm kind of gets into it because Rahm's a father, but Colin doesn't say anything.
Didn't care.
He has no kids. He can't relate. He's like, my dog is an Instagram. Do you want to see that? No. It was like he liked it. And then he just sat back in silence.
Just don't have kids. Don't understand. I will say this. I don't have a loser. I have no loser for this episode.
Same wavelength in all caps, no loser. I enjoyed this from start to finish so much. It was
favorite episode at this episode. Point.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Golf thing that needs more explanation. Qualifying for the US Open, I would say is probably the thing. They touched on it as much as you needed to touch on it for this episode. I didn't think it was massively important, but you know, I mean, these qualifying days, a lot of tour players get through. There's a couple of sites where all the tour players go. They normally have 20, 25 spots there. A lot of the other qualifying spots around the country might have two or three spots. So for somebody like Joel, understanding he could go out there and shoot 5 under, that would not be the case if he was trying to qualify at a smaller place. So qualify for the US Open is something, you know, thousands of people do every year. And it's a great day, longest day in golf. And it's one of the more special days in really all professional sports, in my opinion, because in theory, anybody could qualify and even some of the best in the world have to go do it.
Exactly. I love that too. And then just seeing, I hope people understand really how crazy it is that he went from that to then having a chance to win. You have to play such solid golf for so long. Mine was something they could have included, but I'm okay that they didn't. Gino is very like vocal about like where he's staying during these week, caddy lodging. And so US Open week, he stayed at a Boston College dorm. And I went to Boston College. So we were talking about it and he was staying in this dorm, but it was also an orientation week. So there were kids, like incoming freshmen staying on the same floor as him. And just, I remember we were talking and I gave him this recommendation for dinner, which 22-year-old me loved this taco place, but now I'm looking, I was like, I liked it because I had $25 in my bank account. And he's like,
right,
Claire, that
right.
wasn't that good. And I was thinking that was like my favorite spot to go to, but now it makes sense. But I think that would have been hilarious because he shared there's been 4 twin beds in a room before where I forget, was that at Pebble, I think a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
The craziness that caddies kind of have to endure to caddy for their guy week in and week out.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, I love the fact that just dipping into the world of the caddy was a part of this series. And I think it was very important to do that. And I'm glad they did it. Also, just throwing this out there, if you don't follow Gino on social media, you're doing it wrong. Follow Gino. He's very, very funny. What's something you learned on this episode, Claire?
2 things. I had read about Joel's mom, I think in the Players Tribune, I think, right after the US Open last year.
Right.
But just his willingness to get emotional about it and not apologize for it. I kind of just learned that I like him more than I thought I did. And then I learned about his wife. I feel like I keep track of all the player wives and girlfriends and she's, you know, private and that's totally fine. But I liked that we got to learn about her and like her. So
yeah, she's like one of the nicest people you'll ever run across in the history of the world. And also I think she has I think she has like a food Instagram account that does very, very well. So sorry, we're not giving the actual name a shout out, but I'm sure you can find that easier if you just Google it than probably you can if you're trying to write down what we're having to say. I would say, I mean, that thing I learned just more about their relationship. You know, I mean, I called Gino, asked him a little bit about more of where they came from and how much they knew about each other coming up. I mean, hearing about Joel being such a great McKenzie player and that being the reason that Gino reached out to him, the letter, not a lot of caddies send letters to players asking to work for them, especially as thought out as that piece was. So yeah, I think that's the thing I learned. I knew they were close. I knew they were buddies. I've been out with the both of them at the same time, but to learn a little bit more on why they're so close and why it works so well, I thought was special. Something you changed your mind on, mentioned this with Joel, but I think the term boner as an insult, I don't use it, never really used it. Seems like one of those words that kind of makes you cringe, but I think as an insult, especially on the golf course, it's a perfect dig when you do something dumb. So anyway, I'm not going to use it on air, but I might use it more with my buddies.
I was just going to suggest that use it on PGA Tour Live, but I'll take it back. Okay. What I learned or changed my mind on is why I love these guys. I previously, you know, I've always liked them, but I was just, they were funny. And now I just appreciate, you know, Joel's been through a lot and their relationship is so special and Joel was willing to get emotional in it. So the reason that I like them has changed, but I still like them a lot.
Well, I mean, they're, again, this is giving you, I mean, I think the point of this series is to give a peek into who these people are more than what you see on the golf course and in a 30-second interview clip that's floating around on social media. And again, think about Joel throughout the episode, right? We've touched on a few things, you know, working out with his wife, making bacon in the morning. I mean, he considers himself a great breakfast chef, right? Joel, I think that's on his PGA Tour profile about how good I am at making breakfast and stroller shopping and what you wear to stroller shopping, right? It's just so casual and it's so relaxing. Yet in that body of his, in that mind of his is, you know, one of the top 100 best at his craft in the whole world, which is wild to think about. And so again, I think what this has done so good at so far, four episodes in, is showing that all of these guys are very different. Brooks Koepka is very different than Joel Damon. Ian Poulter is very different than Jordan Spieth, but it gives a clue into them and their lives and what they go through and why they have to do pretty normal stuff outside of being a famous professional golfer.
Absolutely. And then what do you think the average golf fan is going to get out of this?
I would say that Joel Damon is one of the easiest people to root for in all of sport, no matter the sport. His story, his journey, his attitude, even the self-deprecating nature of what he says about his own golf game. I mean, I'm not talking about golfers here, Claire. I'm saying athlete. I mean, I think as an athlete, you watch this episode and 9 out of 10 people are going to walk away wanting to root for Joel Damon. Go watch him on the golf course, see how he does in golf tournaments, maybe favorite him on the PGA Tour app like I do. I think that this is going to be a big come up for Joel more than anybody else so far in this series.
I agree. I think Joel is about to become a lot of people's favorite golfer. And people know Brooks. People know, you know, Scottie Scheffler. This is someone that people don't know a lot about. And he is about to explode, I think, after this. And Gino, of course, the both of them will. And people will get a takeaway just how grueling the U.S. Open qualifying process is.
Yeah, I do it every year. It's I've got through local one time. That 36-hole day is no joke, especially I was in one of the qualifiers with all the tour guys because it was the only one I could play in. And so, you know, you're looking around and all I kept thinking about on the driving range was that guy's not the U.S. Open. Wow. Oh, that guy's not the U.S. Open. Wow. That guy's not the, you know, it's, you're seeing all these tour players and the same thing last year. I'm sure you and I would have gone, oh, Joel Damon's not in the U.S. Open. That is rather strange. And then he damn near wins the thing, at least got himself in contention. So much fun. Oh, I love this one. I've watched this episode, I think, 3 times now, and it just keeps getting better and better. Shout out to Joel, by the way, for taking a bit of time and joining us. Shout out to Gino, chatted with him right before he went out on the golf course and he got yelled at for being on his phone. So thanks for taking 5 minutes to talk to us. And shout out to you, Claire. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll be back with episode 5. This is Full Swing Tonight with Get a Grip and Scratch. Make sure you follow Claire on social media, K Claire Rogers. Check out all she does at golf.com. She's doing amazing work. Rory, McElroy approved work at golf.com. I think it's Rory's favorite writer now is Claire Rogers. So take that for what it's worth. I know you're growing up. You're blowing up just like Joel Damon. So we'll be back with episode 5. Thanks so much for listening.